Bill Buckmaster with you, John Couch, my engineer producer on the other side of the glass, and together we welcome you to the Buckmaster Show. It's Tuesday, March 24th, 2020. We are practicing safe distancing while bringing people together from the Green Things Zocalo Village Studio on 1030, Tucson's voice for trusted news talk. We have our worldwide live listening, which means you can hear this program anywhere in the world as long as you have a computer. You can listen at buckmastershow.com and kvoi.com. All of our podcasts available for you. We have an extensive archive of programs at buckmastershow.com. The live line number 790-2040. Well, as America struggles with the most difficult economic challenges since the Great Depression, a University of Arizona professor of economics has summarized evidence from a number of studies that suggests the widely held belief that World War II was a fiscal stimulus for Tucson and the greater U.S. economy recovering from the Great Depression is simply not true. Joining us on the live line is Price Fishback, the Thomas R. Brown Professor of Economics at the University of Arizona's Eller College of Management. Professor Fishback, how are you, sir?
Just fine. Thank you for having me.
Tell me a little bit about your thinking here. How did you come to this conclusion, please?
Well, so part of this was being done by Simon Kuznets back in the 1940s and 1950s. And then my thesis advisor, Bob Higgs, wrote some material on this in the early 1990s. And so the point is, one thing to remember is, it's not like we didn't produce a lot of stuff. I mean, matter of fact, it was an amazing ability to turn out a huge amount of military goods and be able to fight this war. The point about this is, as a sacrifice to fight the war, so that we actually produced huge amounts of material. I mean, just enormous amounts, planes, automobiles, not automobiles, but Jeeps and all those kind of things, munitions. But it was 40% of the economy. Now, if you looked at the typical way a person was living in 1942 during the war, their consumption didn't look too much different from what it did in 1939 or 1940. And so that's the point that we're trying to make in this, is that the war was a sacrifice. It wasn't a situation where you got more guns and more butter at the same time.
How about this often overlooked cost, Professor, of World War II, that the transition from peacetime to wartime and then back again, the production lines had to be completely transformed, and this kind of crippled costs for companies, didn't it?
But certainly, that's part of the cost. And so, and then when they're producing things that normally people would. It's the kind of things we had to fight this war. Everybody agrees that we had to fight the war. It's just we had to give up a lot to fight the war. And I think that's the point. And a key thing about it is, if America had to give up a lot to fight the war, with the war not being fought here, then just think how horrible it was for the rest of the world.
What kind of economic impact did the war have specifically, Professor, on Southern Arizona? Could you give us kind of an overview on that?
Well, what would have happened is that the various industries that were here at the time would have expanded for war production, but they would have shifted away from the production of things like refrigerators or automobiles. They weren't building any housing during the time period because everything was going towards the war effort. So I think I said before, about 40% of the GDP was actually being used to produce wartime stuff. And then, you know, we talk about how it eliminated unemployment, but I can eliminate unemployment immediately if I take 17% of the labor force and put them in the army, in the military, and things like that. So we had just totally shifted our production in different directions. Now, people were making more money than they had been before, but the problem is that there was nothing to spend it on. So they actually had more. And one of the key things is what you see this huge boom in private investment and private consumption right after the war. So it looks like it delayed a lot of what was going on. The war itself delayed what would have normally happened otherwise.
Now we have another war. We have what I think economists call a black swan event. How worried are you, Professor, that we will be going into Depression 2.0?
Well, I don't think this is going to be like the Great Depression. It kind of takes a, you know, we have this sudden shock that's forcing people to stay home. And one of the, again, there's a huge contrast today, how much we're emphasizing safety compared to, say, 1918 with the Spanish flu, which was probably as dangerous or more dangerous than the coronavirus. And so I expect that there's going to be a downturn, and you're seeing unemployment rates going up, and you're also seeing, and they naturally would, because all sorts of people are stepping back or being laid off. And so there's going to be a drop. It's just a question of how long we're going to be staying in semi-quarantine, and then does it take to recover afterwards? And I don't think this is going to throw us into a long-run depression. It's probably going to be more like what happened in 2007 and 2008.
Price Fishback is with us, Professor Fishback, the Thomas R. Brown Professor of Economics at the University of Arizona's Eller College of Management. You brought up 1918, Professor, and I was just reflecting, it's kind of hard to gauge the impact of the Spanish flu of 1918 on the economy, because after all, America was in a wartime economy at the time with World War I, correct?
Definitely. And it wasn't, the good thing was it wasn't nearly as intense as World War II, but it was still, it's still a wartime economy, and that was a period of sacrifice as well.
So can we conclude that the Spanish, do we have any idea what the Spanish flu, what the economic effect was on the United States at the time? After all, we had quarantines and the like. Can you give us some kind of a feel for that?
Well, there's some work that Robert Barrow just put out, a working paper. He's at Harvard with a group of people, and I haven't had a chance to look at it. But so one of the ways you can contrast what's going on today with back then, in that we started having problems with the Spanish flu in March of 1918. And then we started sending all these people overseas to fight in the war. And we were actually sending, and the military is having all sorts of problems. They're having quarantines, a lot of people getting sick. And they're, in the middle of all that, we're sending like hundreds of thousands of troops on boats across the ocean in the midst of this problem. Then the flu abates. And then in September of that year, in 2018, the federal government actually states to reporters, like around September 11th or so, that we're seeing this flu coming back and things like this. And 2 days later, they have 13 million people signing up for the draft in all these various post offices. And so it was like looking at all those airports over the weekend when people were coming home, everybody jammed together. So talk about a public health nightmare. So in the midst of this, what they did at that time was they quarantined people who were sick, but they didn't try to stop everybody else from moving along during this time period. We're in a much richer society now than we were back then, and so we can afford more to do this quarantining now than we did back then.
That's a key point, though. I'm glad you brought that up, Professor. The recovery, when it comes, will it be very swift, perhaps much more so than 2008?
I think it will in the following sense. It depends on how we react and how long we're under. One of the key things that the Federal Reserve has announced it's going to do is make a lot more loans, short-term loans, to not just banks, but also directly to small and large companies. And then also you've seen like Governor Ducey has actually opened up unemployment benefits and reduced the waiting period and also opened it up in all sorts of different ways. So as long as we put it up so that we're solving a liquidity problem where we're struggling for the moment, but we don't start losing companies to bankruptcy and companies failing and people losing their jobs permanently, we should be able to snap back pretty quickly. I mean, if we start getting to this position where all sorts of companies are having to shut down and then you have to restart everything from scratch, then that's going to be a much more serious issue. And so I think the idea of making sure everybody's got a little.
All right, Professor Fishback, thank you very much for joining us. Appreciate it. Thank you, sir.
Sure. Thank you.
Price Fishback is the Thomas R. Brown Professor of Economics at the University of Arizona's Eller College of Management. This portion of the Buckmaster Show, presented by Mona's Danish Bakery. We love Mona's Danish Bakery, and they are open for business. Really important for all of our local clients and restaurants to understand that right now in Pima County, we do have a pickup and delivery only situation. So here's the deal with Mona's. You can certainly go into the bakery, get your bakery goods, and you can leave. Their hours are 6:30 in the morning to 2 o'clock in the afternoon. Good starting place if you would like to know more about Mona's. The phone number is also on their website, monasdanishbakery.com. That phone number, in case you want to jot it down, and I hope you do, 579-1959. Just give them a call. Say, I'd like to come by at a particular time, and I'd like such and such for lunch. They'll have your lunch ready, or if you still want breakfast, they can make that happen as well. And of course, they have the full counter just loaded with those great bakery goods. And some folks have been finding difficulty finding their particular bread that they like at the supermarket. No problem. How about Mona's bread? They've got such a great variety of freshly baked bread. So check it out, monasdanishbakery.com. Also a link at buckmastershow.com. Shelley Fishman will talk more about the economy and the markets with our Tuesday Moneymaker Report with Mr. Fishman right after this.
The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun cover two of Arizona's most desirable communities. The newspapers reach more than 75% of the communities each week, with a combined population of more than 50,000. The Green Valley News also publishes a dozen magazines each year, and both newspapers publish up-to-the-minute local news online at gvnews.com. The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun, it's all right here.
The Regional Transportation Authority and its member jurisdictions have completed more than 850 transportation projects or service improvements across the region to date. The RTA is a state-established political subdivision and taxing district. The RTA's current half-cent sales tax funds the 20-year plan through June 2026. And the RTA is laying the foundation to develop a new plan. To learn more, please visit www.rtanext.com. During the coronavirus crisis, Vero Amore restaurants in Plaza Palomino at Fort Lowland Swan and Dove Mountain Boulevard in Marana are still open for takeout and home delivery. You can still enjoy all your favorite Vero Amore menu items, including Tucson's only certified authentic Neapolitan wood-fired pizza. They're all available for takeout and home delivery. More at veroamorepizza.com.
This is Bill Buckmaster encouraging you to fly from Tucson International Airport. When you fly Tucson, you're standing up for Tucson. A new study shows the Tucson Airport Authority's annual economic impact is $7.4 billion, with almost $1 billion of that from visitors flying into the airport. Fly Tucson, and airlines will respond with more flights, bringing more visitors, benefiting all of us. Type in TUS when you book your next flight and fly Tucson.
Biosphere 2's new ocean tour takes you behind the scenes of the largest experimental ocean in the world, researching solutions for the global coral reef crisis. Other exciting tours include The Amazing 30-Year History, a family tour for families with kids 10 and under, and the inspiring Under the Glass Tour, one of the 50 must-see wonders of the world. Visit UA Biosphere 2 today. Explore the future. Online giving for coral reef research and information about tours and more at biosphere2.org. Vets working hard to save wildlife covered in cactus spines. A skunk left for dead, miraculously saved by a caring citizen. Those are just a couple of the headlines from the nonprofit Tucson Animal Rescue Center, where thousands of animals are cared for each year at its state-of-the-art Far East Side Tucson facility. Rescue, rehab, and release. The Tucson Wildlife Center, saving wildlife for more than two decades. Donate online at TucsonWildlife.com or call 290-WILD.
Cushman & Wakefield PICOR is Tucson's leading independently owned full-service commercial real estate company. Founded in 1985, Cushman & Wakefield PICOR offers leasing, sales, and property management for industrial, office, medical, retail, land, and investment properties in Tucson and Sonora, Mexico. Visit our website at PICOR.com for the latest news from Tucson's commercial real estate sector. That's PICOR.com. Call us at 748-7100.
Shelly Fishman is a financial consultant in private practice in Tucson, Arizona. The views expressed during this segment are his own and don't necessarily represent those of this station or of Bill Buckmaster Communications. Contact Shelly through buckmastershow.com or at shellyfishman.com.
And now it's time for Shelly Fishman in the Green Things, Zocalo Village Studios on 1030 The Voice. And we continue with our social distancing. That means that Shelly is not with me in studio. And I do miss Shelly being in studio with me, but I do, of course, understand that we are keeping our telephonic distancing going on. Shelly, how are you, sir?
I am well, Bill. How are you doing?
I'm doing real well. Hey, I miss you over here, but I understand what's going on. And very, very happy with what I'm seeing on the numbers on Wall Street. I think before today, and correct me if I'm wrong, Shelly, but I think since our high, which didn't happen that long ago on the Dow, we were down about 37%, and now we're getting some real good movement to the upside, aren't we?
Well, we have about a 10% movement today in the Dow to the upside. Now, keep in mind, a 10% movement to the upside when you're starting from a lower number is not the same as a 10% movement down from a higher number. So we haven't recovered back to 27% from 37. We're still probably at around 30% off the very peak of 3 or 4 weeks ago. This is clearly in bear market territory, and I think today's movement in the market is a reflection of some hope on the part of investors, especially institutional investors, that there'll be something like a $2 trillion with a T dollar stimulus package being passed through Congress and signed by the president maybe as early as Thursday.
Boy, am I glad you were good at math and are good at math, because math was not one of my strong areas of school. Now, English and speech and verbal things I did very well. So I'm glad you pointed out that the market, you said 10%. I was thinking, oh, great, we're now back to, that would put it at 27%. But you're saying, no, it's about 30.
Right. So yeah. 10% up from a lower number isn't
yes.
the same as 10% down
yeah.
from a higher number. Some stuff just to talk about, because, mm-hmm. Bill, we are in a recession right now.
Yes.
And I've been very suspicious of the February employment numbers, as you know. These are extrapolations from the Department of Labor. They were ridiculously high. I believe they'll be revised when we get the more accurate numbers in a week or two. So we have that. But more importantly, we haven't seen, at least I haven't seen, official numbers for the GDP growth in the fourth quarter. Those are now way overdue. I believe that GDP growth in the first quarter will be negative, probably to the tune of about 0.5%, and the second quarter could go as much as 15% or 20% down. That puts us in firmly in recession territory. The question really then becomes, how do we get out of this? How do people get back to work? How does the dislocations that are being caused by just staying safe, how do we recover from that? One thing I'm absolutely certain of is the idea that we are going to relax these distancing restrictions by Easter is somebody's idea of a silly dream. That's not going to happen. If it does happen, it'll be massively dangerous. If people like the Lieutenant Governor of Texas would like to jump off a bridge to save the world, let him do it. I'm not jumping off a bridge. I believe what we need to do is make sure we fight this virus with everything we've got and then worry about the economy afterwards.
Shelley, something very important concerning, and I've heard this a little bit about this. Could you explain, please, new rules around IRAs?
Yeah. Hey, thank you for asking, Bill. That's really important as we get to the filing deadline for the 2019 taxes. Now, the rules have now changed so that the filing deadline is still the middle of April. However, if you owe your taxes, you have until, I believe it's July 1st, I'm speaking from memory, I believe it's July 1st to actually pay any taxes you owe. But you still have to file. Now, for people who are filing their taxes, there's a couple of things they need to think about. One of those things might be a contribution to their IRA or Roth accounts. And the limits for 2019 are the same as the limits for the prior year. It's $6,000 unless you're over 50, and then you can you have a catch-up of $1,000. So if you have the money and you're still employed and you believe it's the right thing to do, then I always encourage people to save for retirement, and they will need to do that for the year 2019 by the day that they file their taxes. So that's one thing. The changes that the tax law contained that nobody talked a lot about was what happens when you have to start using your IRA money. There used to be something called a required minimum distribution. There still is, except it doesn't start at age 70 and a half anymore. It starts at age 72. So if you were not 72, or you did not become 72 or if you did become 72 in the year 2019, then you need to start taking required minimum distributions, and so that's the way that will work. Now, I'm saying that wrong, Bill. Let me correct myself. If you became 72 in 2019, then you were already 70 and a half, so you probably already started. But you don't need, if you haven't started, you don't need to start taking required minimum distributions until the year in which you become 72, and similar kind of rules apply. You've got until April 1st of the next year to do the first one, and then you'd have to do two in that year. But at any rate, it's really something that you should discuss with your advisor as to when you should start taking those things. But be aware that the rules have changed. In addition, if you are, say, a surviving spouse, and you are inheriting an IRA, you will no longer be allowed to, if you're a surviving spouse, the rules don't change. You simply accept that IRA and it becomes your IRA. If you are, however, not a surviving spouse, if you are, say, a child or a beneficiary or someone else who's inheriting an IRA, then you can no longer stretch that IRA out for the balance of your life. You only have 10 years to pay the taxes on it. So there's changes there, too. And once again, I encourage anybody who's in that situation to discuss the new rules with their financial advisors, because, you know, these rules tend to be fairly convoluted and messy, especially when we talk about things like SEP IRAs or KEOs or SIMPLES. The rules are slightly different for each one of those. So talk to your advisor before you make any assumptions about what you need to do or not do under the new rules.
In the remaining 2 minutes or so, please kind of wrap up what you see the latest financial effects of the pandemic are, Shelley.
Well, the latest financial effects are that we're in recession. I believe we were going to have a mild recession regardless, but it appears that this is a recession that is going to be much more serious than we anticipated as a result of the virus and the steps we're taking to contain the virus in this country, the rest of the world. And keep in mind that supply chains have all been disrupted. The demand side is now disrupted as well. There's no way that cannot result in very serious economic turmoil. So So I'm not optimistic about getting out of this anytime soon. I'm hoping that the Congress and certainly the both the Fed and the Treasury Department are doing what they need to do at this point to put in place the weapons they need, the arrows in their quiver to begin to soften the impact, number one, and number two, once the restrictions are off, that we can get the economy back moving again. But it would be foolish, I think, to be overly optimistic. This is going to be a difficult time for investors. It's going to be a difficult time for those in the economy who are typically the most subject to turmoil in the economy. You know, for white collar workers who have good jobs who can work at home, these things, yeah, your 401k doesn't look any good, but you'll do fine. But for people in the service industry, the airlines and the restaurants, these people are being hurt and will continue to be hurt for a while. And I feel really bad that we don't have safety nets for these people.
And, that's right.
And now we're putting them, we're putting something in place. Hopefully, this won't be the last thing that we put in place. But the politics around it are awkward and are alarming to hear. We need to get away from the politics. We need to make these things transparent and monitorable. And we need to make sure that no one person has control of it, that this is controlled by people who are regulated and that the rules are very clear.
So all right.
That's my feeling about it, I wish I were more optimistic. I'm just not.
Thank you, Shelley. Have a great day. Thanks, sir.
Thank you.
Are you happy with the news you get? While not all news is good news, you know good reporting when you see it. Check TucsonSentinel.com every day for breaking news and investigative reports. Have your say in the comments. It's all in TucsonSentinel.com, your local, independent, nonprofit news. You can rely on TucsonSentinel.com for solid reporting about immigration, Tucson and Pima politics, everything from the border to baseball. It's independent news without the spin. TucsonSentinel.com. We are watching Tucson.
Let's say you need an honest roofer. Where do you start? Better Business Bureau of Southern Arizona has more than 3,200 accredited businesses ready to help and committed to doing things right. Next time you need a trusted mechanic, plumber, AC company, or florist, go to our website, bbb.org, or call us at 520-888-6161. Better Business Bureau of Southern Arizona. We are here to help you find local companies you can trust.
Family-owned Jam Culinary Concepts and its family of restaurants has you covered for your special event. Jam caters anytime, anywhere, any size group, and any type of cuisine. Vero Amore, authentic Neapolitan pizza, and Noble Hops. Craft beer and fine fare are synonymous with quality. Call 954-1468 or log on to jamculinaryconcepts.com.
Biosphere 2's new ocean tour takes you behind the scenes of the largest experimental ocean in the world, researching solutions for the global coral reef crisis. Other exciting tours include the amazing 30-year history, a family tour for families with kids 10 and under, and the inspiring Under the Glass tour, one of the 50 must-see wonders of the world. Visit UA Biosphere 2 today. Explore the future. Online giving for coral reef research and information about tours and more at biosphere2.org.
The Friends of Pima Animal Care Center is the nonprofit partner to our Pima County Animal Shelter. We grant critically needed resources to PACC so that it can continue the amazing life-saving progress it has made in recent years. Your generosity helps us find homes for abused, neglected, and abandoned animals at PAC. Learn how you can help at friendsofpacc.org.
Green Things is a family-owned and operated plant nursery serving Tucson since 1970. Open daily at 3384 East River Road, Green Things is chock full of plants and pottery from around the world. Green Things is also now home to Zocalo, featuring fine Mexican and South American imports spread over five buildings on the 13-acre Green Things property. For more, visit greenthingsaz.com and zocalovillage.com.
This is Moa Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing.
And this is Bill Buckmaster. For several decades now, Moe has been my go-to expert for all my framing needs and bathroom mirrors. I trust Moe for service, professionalism, and top-of-the-line quality.
Thanks, Bill. Give us a call at 795-8226 and stop by Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing on the southwest corner of Fort Lowell and Dodge, right next to Copenhagen, and on the web at moesgallery.com.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show. I'm Bill Buckmaster in the Green Things Zocalo Village Studio. Speaking of Green Things, Jan and Jack, the owners, have informed me that on their 13-acre site, it is now filled with everything you need for your garden. All your spring planting, they've got you covered. Green Things, 50 years and still growing. Over at 3384 East River Road, lots of people spending time in the backyard these days and in the garden. So Green Things, AZ.com, great place to go before you make the visit over there. And, of course, ZocaloVillage.com as well. A once mighty industry, a giant of an industry, has been brought to its knees by the economic effects of the Black Swan event known as COVID-19. Yesterday, thousands of flights were canceled, in some cases because planes weren't full enough to justify the trip. Some planes didn't take off. The ones that did were emptier than ever before. I have an example in front of me. I heard a flight between New York's LaGuardia Airport and Washington, D.C. had just three passengers. Oh, my goodness. With us now on the live line, the Buckmaster Show contributor on aviation, JetBlue Captain Jeff Lattice, a resident of Oro Valley, a highly decorated retired combat fighter pilot. Jeff flies the Airbus A320 and the A321. He has nearly 20,000 hours of accident-free experience. Jeff, how are you?
I'm doing fine, Bill.
You know, hearing about a flight with three passengers. After 9/11, I was among the first to want to get back on an airplane. I felt when the word came down, it was safe enough to do so. And once I feel kind of the all clear is here, I'll be among the first to again resume flying. What kind of load factors are you seeing now on JetBlue?
Well, I just finished a four-day trip. I just got back last night. And most of the flights I was seeing probably 20% maybe. And part of the reason why we had that many people is because about half the flights had been canceled. And some of those people got rebooked on my flights. So it's definitely empty. And airports are empty. It's almost surreal to see, you know, the industry right now.
We've got to have an airline industry, I think, even through this crisis. And I know that your company announced last night about only scheduling essential flights. What does the company consider, Jeff Lattice, to be essential?
Okay. Well, I would like to know, too, because I don't know exactly what that meant. I know that after reading some other information about what essential is, people don't really realize that airlines do a lot and maybe the bulk of a lot of the post office mail.
Yes.
So we haul a lot of postal, and that is somewhat essential. So what I'm kind of seeing is that we're not going to cancel all our flights to, let's say, L.A., New York. We'll keep some of those open. But going into April, I'm anticipating probably about 60% of our flights are going to get canceled.
There's this issue with the air traffic controllers. There were some clean shutdowns of several of the towers, as you know, for a brief period of time, JFK, Philadelphia, McCarran International Airport in Las Vegas, that were corona-related. That's going to be an issue, too, going forward, isn't it, Jeff Lattis?
Yeah, it appears that, and the thing is, when this happened this weekend, it was very unexpected. There were airplanes en route to New York when New York announced that they weren't going to accept any more traffic, and airplanes diverted to other regions. And when you say a regional control, New York airspace is actually bigger than New York State. Hmm. It extends quite a bit more. You know, there's only a few centers out there. So when they did that, you know, it actually required aircraft to divert to places that we had one plane coming from L.A. that diverted into New Orleans.
Wow.
And sometimes they basically say, just get enough gas and I'm going to go back to L.A. So, I mean, that's how bad it's really has gotten. And obviously passengers don't understand it. And a lot of the reasons why they don't understand is because we don't understand it either. So this is something that's, you know, that we've never seen before. And I flew into Las Vegas this weekend, and it was uncontrolled field. It's like flying into Marana.
What?
For instance,
there was no one. There was no one at the McCarran Field Tower.
Yeah, it was basically like flying into a place that has no tower.
Wow.
And, obviously it's a little bit of concern. They limited the number of flights that come in. It is, and to say it's completely uncontrolled is probably a misnomer. The center control will limit an approaching aircraft to a point, and if the preceding aircraft is not off the runway and they have to tell center that, okay, we've cleared the runway, and then they let the other guy come in. And that's the reason why there's so many delays right now going into places like this, because, you know, it takes a lot of time for that to happen. So, yeah, it was a lot different than what we're used to seeing operating as airline pilots.
One thing I was thinking about for folks that have not flown recently through all of this about the queue, takeoff and pushback times and everything, have those improved?
Yeah. Yeah, it's not too hard to load an airplane up with, you know, 20 people,
right.
You know, so a half an hour is plenty of time to get those people on. And, you know, usually we're pushing early now. So as a matter of fact, coming back home last night from L.A., there was only 7 of us on the airplane.
Oh, my goodness.
As far as a commuter like me, where I'm basically hitchhiking a ride, it's definitely decreased the stress on that aspect.
So when it's all said and done, are we going to have just a few carriers emerge from this? Your own personal thoughts on that, please, Jeff Lattis.
Well, you know, it kind of depends on the bailout package comes down. If it's where, you know, the furloughs are minimalized it's easy to get the airplanes back up and running. It depends on how fast the public feels safe about flying. I think that's going to be all the factors in there. However, we're already seeing airliners that are caught and they're going to shut their doors. Compass, who is a regional carrier for like American and Delta, they're closing their doors here this week and going out of business. Hmm. So, you know, we're starting to see that now. Compass is a fairly small airline, but it wouldn't surprise me if we see a few more. And I did notice that the stocks were up a little bit today. But It's going to be a different world here in 3 or 4 months.
Yeah, when you think about Air New Zealand cutting back, doing no international flights, Singapore Air, the highly regarded, always number one, it seems, on all the international flying lists, 95%, Jeff, cut back.
Yeah.
Qantas, the storied Australian airliner, no more international flights, still servicing domestic Sydney up to Queensland, over to Perth. That's about it. This is when this all is over. The startup on this is going to be something. It's not going to happen overnight, Jeff Lattice.
Here again, time will tell. The sooner this is over, the less impact there'll be, obviously. What's going to happen if this gets to be extended, our pilots are going to become unqualified.
Yep.
And that requires additional training to get back qualified, as you know, because I was texting you earlier about all the airplanes they parked over here at Marana.
Oh, yeah.
Those are all their basically transatlantic airplanes, the 767s and Airbus 330s. If those pilots become unqualified, well, that takes 3 or 4 days to put them through training, and then you got to schedule them for training.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, it's going to be, you know, the logistics of getting the pilots out there to fly the airplanes back to where they need to be. You know, it's going to take a couple months.
Yep. Jeff, we're out of time. Always a pleasure talking to you. We will continue to keep in touch, and I'll be informing my listeners on some of your thoughts. Thank you, Jeff.
You bet, Bill. Thank you.
Jeff Lattice, our aviation contributor on the Buckmaster Show, really senior pilot. This guy, he's at the top of his game. He knows what he's talking about. Captain for JetBlue, flying 3 people in an aircraft, or as Jeff said, coming back from L.A., 7 people on board. Anyway, we'll get more about the tourism industry next from Visit Tucson's Dan Gibson back after this.
Hey, it's Ryan Hansen from Bon Voyage Travel.
And this is Matt Russell from the Buckmaster Show.
Matt, did you hear that Travel and Leisure magazine just ranked the Douro Valley as a top 50 spot for world travel?
Yes, so how about Portugal and Spain for my next culinary and cocktail cruise?
Let's do it on the Douro River aboard the new Amadouro ship from Ama Waterways.
I'll need a chef's table dinner, winery tours, and other private excursions.
Matt, consider it done.
Thanks, Ryan. Portugal and Spain, here we come. Go to bvtravel.com to learn more.
The average person in the USA today takes over 12 prescription medicines each year, and if you are over age 65, it is more than 17 medicines. CredibleMeds.org is a nonprofit organization dedicated to helping inform you and your healthcare providers. Over 30,000 people die each year from reactions to their medicines. Don't be one of those numbers. Be informed and stay safe. Visit CredibleMeds.org today and take control of your healthcare by taking your medicines safely.
During this coronavirus crisis, Noble Hops, a pub for foodies, is still open for takeout and home delivery only. You can get all of your favorite Noble Hops menu offerings. Come pick them up, or they'll bring them to you. So check out Noble Hops on West Lambert Lane at North La Cunada Drive in Oro Valley, and online at noblehopspub.com. The current Regional Transportation Authority plan is funded by a half-cent sales tax, which expires in June 2026. In preparation for developing a new 20-year plan, the RTA board established a Citizens Advisory Committee to identify priority projects based on public input. RTA member jurisdictions will submit their respective project lists by June 2020 for the CAC to consider for a future plan. To learn more, visit www.rtanext.com.
Buckmaster Show listeners know about my love of travel and flying from Tucson International Airport. I know you value your time and money, so it makes sense to fly Tucson with nearly 60 daily nonstop flights to major hub airports. If you're flying to another airport to take a nonstop flight, you're still making a connection and spending 4 hours on the road traveling to that other airport. That's why I fly Tucson and encourage you to do the same. As a small business owner, I appreciate the services of a top-notch certified public accountant. That's why Michael C. Flowers of Flowers, Rieger & Associates is the CPA firm of the Buckmaster Show. Michael's a former Small Business Leader of the Year in Tucson. He'll professionally handle all of your accounting needs and tax preparation services. Flowers, Rieger & Associates, 6125 East Grant Road, and on the web, flowersrieger.com.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show on 1030 The Voice, trusted news talk. This portion presented by our friends in Silver City and Grant County, New Mexico, where they are planning for the Memorial Day weekend Silver City Blues Festival. Hopefully things will be calmed down enough that folks can feel confident getting in the car and driving over to Silver City, about a three-hour drive. Visit southwestnewmexico.org for the complete list of great places to stay and all sorts of great recreation opportunities like hiking in the Gila National Wilderness. Silver City and Grant County, New Mexico, one of our great loyal sponsors. Visit Tucson's Dan Gibson joins us now on the live line. Hey, Dan, these are very, very trying times for those in the tourism industry, for sure.
It's every day is different, for sure. I mean, the job is, tourism is always, I think, so moving, and our organization has always tried to be nimble, but it's definitely, we're mostly working from home and trying to stay connected and just try to figure out how to work with what we have right now.
As I pointed out in our interview before this segment with Jeff Lattice, our friend who flies for JetBlue, who lives, he's captain of JetBlue, lives up in Oro Valley, and he was talking about when people will feel confident enough to fly again. I shared that after 9/11, as soon as it was safe to fly again, I had enough confidence in our aviation industry that I quickly jumped on board. This is going to be a little different because the whole subjective thing, like, is it safe for me to travel? This recovery, it's kind of a fly by the seat of your pants recovery that's going to be coming.
Yeah, to some extent. I mean, I think we're working hard to sort of be prepared for whenever that happens, right? How do we think about that messaging? How do you sort of invite people back, let people know that they're welcome, that tourism is a big part of our national economy. It's a big part of our state economy. It's a big part of our local economy. But I think to some extent, I guess what I'm, the optimism I'm finding to some is that, you know, we look at that. There was an article in the South China Morning News the other day about how Chinese people are starting to look at domestic trips already. Obviously, the track of how the coronavirus has gone there is, it seems to be different in each locality or each nation about how the path of these things happen. But Chinese people are already looking at attractions. They're looking at going at the places they were looking at online while they were homebound. And you're seeing that people are making plans for May in Chinese nationals are not out of the country as of yet, but they're looking at very sort of domestic exploring around them. And I, the part of me that hopes that that's sort of how it expands here is that, Lord willing, all of this will sort of taper down by at least by the summer. And then we'll start our summer campaign to sort of say, like, you know, people in Phoenix or in the sort of drive markets, that the resorts will be open, that they'll be available, that those experiences that people really enjoy, you can sort of get back into them. I think there's no sort of like clear opportunity. There's no sort of way to like flip this into a positive. It isn't that. But it is a chance to say the things that you are looking for, the sort of things that you want in a destination, that Tucson will check some of those boxes when people are able to get out, the sort of wide open spaces and the opportunity to be outdoors and explore and have these unique experiences.
Yeah, I think Tucson would be very well positioned for outdoor experiences, and people will be looking to get back outside, and they're already outside now, because one of the things, even with the kind of our self-quarantine that's going on, people are still, you know, going outside. They're out in the backyard gardening. They're walking in parks. So I think Tucson domestic will come back first. That's kind of the way it goes. It was that way after 9/11. And I think Tucson could be very well positioned, don't you, Dan Gibson, for a domestic return?
I think the sort of momentum that Tucson has had coming into all of this was really good, and I don't think that's going to dissipate entirely. We do have to remind people back in I guess late 2019 or early 2020, the things that they were looking for in a destination are still what they're looking for when we get out of this. But
I think we might have lost Dan.
They're tagging their friends, right? So it's an interesting, it's such an unexpected situation, so unique in that way. But, people are, hopefully we're trying to encourage people to reschedule instead of cancel, right? Like, let's push it down the road and think about it in the summer in some ways or in the fall.
What are you hearing from our hotel operators? I heard the Arizona Inn has temporarily suspended operations. What are you hearing?
It's kind of all over the place. I mean, the occupancy is not great anywhere. Some of the extended stay properties are doing a little bit better because they're offering services to people who are coming here for medical business or things like that. Like there are doctors staying in extended stay properties and things like that. Casino del Sol, Desert Diamond Casino, those places, Miraval, have all temporarily closed. I think what we're looking at is, it's definitely a struggle because people are, even the staycation market is sort of blown up, right? People aren't looking on the uncertainty. Economic uncertainty doesn't help that either. I think what is inspiring to me is that you're seeing hoteliers like Nicole Dahl at Hotel McCoy really trying to reinvent what they do to serve the community as best as they can, to sort of be the most like Tucson hotel they can be, or what they're doing at Welcome Diner and serving their family meals to anyone, regardless of cost. They're not asking questions about what they can pay. I think what is encouraging to me is that you're seeing the best of Tucson come out as well, which is like dedicated to locality, trying to help our neighbors, working with our community. I think that's what is also going to still shine to people outside of our community, is that, we're in it together, trying to rally and do what we can to encourage each other through some very, very challenging times.
And we're trying to keep the restaurants going. And I think the response has been fairly good. Is that what you're hearing on the takeout? And it doesn't have to be takeout. Most of them are doing delivery too.
Yeah, it's interesting to see that industry revitalize, flip itself in real time. Janos is doing at Downtown Kitchen, that he's offering sort of a greatest hits of his different restaurants over time, or when Peppa's really some interesting sort of takeout possibilities. These are creative people, and I'm super thankful to be working with such creative, dynamic people that are really trying to figure this stuff out while the stress is really nearly overwhelming at times, to think about how you can still serve the community, offer something interesting, reflect the best things about Tucson. So, if you haven't gotten to go from a local restaurant in the last week or so, it's something I encourage people to do. There's great offers, a lot of these restaurants are offering special deals or packages or things like that. It's an opportunity to support these businesses that are, don't have the safety net of a lot of the larger corporations or things like that as well. These are our neighbors, right? I think that's something always to keep in mind.
It is.
How can we look out for each other?
Thank you very much, Dan Gibson. Keep up the good work. Thanks, Dan.
Thank you.
Dan Gibson of Visit Tucson with us on the Buckmaster Show on 1030 The Voice in the Green Thing Zocalo Village Studio. Watch out for one another. Please try to take care of each other. Check on your neighbors. Check out, again, if you want to do some carryout, and I hope you do, keep our local restaurants doing what they're doing, serving great food. On behalf of John Couch, my engineer producer, I'm Bill Buckmaster. Hope you have a great afternoon.